Okay, so good morning or good afternoon, everybody. I can't believe this is our last Coach the Coach 2 class. This is class 4, and it is Monday, January 25th, and I am Jackie Gartman, and I am with Group C. So welcome, everybody, to class. God, time flies. I feel like I just started with you guys a couple of weeks ago. So I love all these classes. Every week I'm like, I love this class, because I really do love teaching all the classes. But in particular, I love this class because, like people are kind of ready to move on to another thought-dissolving tool. And I really like the ACT tools. I do the work on myself, but quite, to be very transparent, if I'm in the car or in a place where I can't do the work, because I always find it much more effective to do it in writing, to actually write your thought down and ask the four questions in writing. What I love about the ACT tools is that I could be in my car at a red light and I could use the tool right then and there. So I use these tools all the time on myself. So I'm really excited to dive into this tool today with all of you and get some practice. And I just want to recommend a book that there's a couple ACT tool books that I think are in your recommended resources or supplemental readings in the binder. But the one I really like is Get Out of Your Mind and Into Your Life. And I think that's by Russ. I think that's by Russ Harris. Just a really fun read, and not only explains the theory and the concept of ACT, but also has a really great, some great exercises in there that go way beyond what we teach you in Coach the Coach. Just a recommendation if you guys want to kind of delve more into the ACT tools. So it looks like Lizelle has joined us. Welcome, Lizelle.
Thank you. Yes, I'm here.
Yay, I'm glad you're here. So as usual, I thought we'd just start off with a little class discussion about any of the tools you've learned, the work in particular. We spent a lot of time on turnarounds last week, so I'm super curious how that's been going for you. You know, if you've been practicing it, how that's been going, or if you've had any challenges with turnarounds or the dismount or just the work in general. So anybody have any questions or comments?
This is Adrienne.
I hope I can say something. We have a terrific small group that that Skypes every Friday morning, and we've been practicing touching each other. And what I found really useful was Martha's video saying, just flip the word on, even if it doesn't make sense, even if it's really silly, because it still can start wiggling the thought around. And so we did that, even, you know, we flipped a couple in the turnarounds, and they were funny, you know, they were kind of laughable when we flipped them around, but we sort of perceived, you know, like, for example, I think one of the turnarounds we had that, you know, we really flipped it was, I think it was, I'm not living the life I want to live. And we flipped it to, I am killing the life I don't want to live. And
Ooh. So
that was kind of interesting. But you know, we got that from the video with Martha, where she said, even if it doesn't make sense, just play around with it and see what happens. So that was really useful.
So the original thought, because I'm not sure I caught the whole thing, the original thought was I'm not living the life I want to live, and the turnaround was I'm killing the life. Did you say
that? I don't want to live. It was something like that.
Killing.
Okay. Exactly. But I switched living to killing, because you think the opposite is dying.
Yeah.
I think the opposite is dying, but we needed to make it an active verb. And,
yeah.
And it just sort of worked and loosened things up a little. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, so that's what we call kind of an extreme turnaround. And I didn't delve too much into that last week, but you can. So you obviously you extracted that from the the video demo with Martha. So that's what we call an extreme turnaround, where you can use the antonym within the context of the limiting belief. So living, you know, you could probably also come up with a great turnaround that includes dying, and killing is fine too. So yeah, did that resonate with the person who had that limiting belief, that turnaround?
I think so. She'd be better able mm-hmm. to tell you. We mm-hmm. didn't, I don't think we, three examples, sorry, I keep hitting something with my chin. I don't think we went into the three examples, but
okay.
I think it was just interesting for us all to observe that that was
yeah.
a possibility that would lead
yeah.
to other
yeah.
insights.
Yeah, and I think I love that. And I think what's also important is, I don't know if I talked to you guys about this last week, I may have, is that sometimes when we're coaching, especially when we're newer coaches, we can get a little bit of ahead of ourselves as the coach, and maybe we might think of a turnaround for the client if they're having a hard time coming up with turnarounds, and we might reject it because it might not resonate or may seem a little too abstract for us. But I'm going to encourage you guys to throw it out anyway, because you never know. You never know what's really going to sink in for that client or resonate for that client. So that's just a little tip I wanted to pass along the way. So, yeah, great example, Hope. Yeah, extreme turnarounds. I think they're fun. I mean, once you kind of get the hang of it, and if you don't get too, you know, caught up in the technicality of it, or, you know, having to find the other, for example, if you don't see it right away, I think that if you really stay curious, you can have a lot of fun with the turnaround. Anybody else have experiences they want to share, or even questions?
This is Adrienne, and I had a question. I was struggling this week when we were when my coach partner and I, Lizelle, we were coaching, and I had trouble dismounting myself mm-hmm. when I was coaching her.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know how to wrap it after we came to the, you know, the turnaround. It's like, okay, now what? You know, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I really had trouble trying to, you know, get her, get that to become a lasting thought for her. She helped me through it. She was great, but I struggled with the dismount.
So were you in class last week, or did you listen to the class recording? I don't remember if you were here last week.
Yes.
About the turnaround, about how the dismount, my ideas for that?
I did, but I think I need a little refresher.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just, you know, practicing it. So usually how, just to go over this really briefly, usually what I do at the end of the work with someone is the very first thing I do always is I'll say to the client, did you have any self-discoveries or insights as a result of doing the work on this belief? So I give them time to process what, if they had any insights or ahas from that. So that could help you to kind of initiate that dismount. And that could be the dismount into itself. But if you want to carry it further after that, I think the work is much more effective and much more powerful if they could bring it into their life and bring it into that situation in particular where that thought gets triggered. So you could simply ask a question like, to your client, how might you live the next week from that turnaround? Or let's say the situation is with their husband and there's a thought that their husband doesn't listen to them, for example. I'm just throwing this as an example. You could say something like, next time you're having a conversation with your husband, how could you live the turnaround that you don't always listen to him? You know, that's a turnaround to the self. Or, you know, whatever the turnaround that, you know, may resonate the most for the client. And that's also something I ask, too. I don't want to pile too much on to you guys, but sometimes I'll go, once I go through, let's say there are three turnarounds, sometimes I'll ask the client, of these three turnarounds, Was there anyone that had a lot of juice for you or that resonated for you the most? And usually, there is usually one or two. And so you can customize the dismount around that particular turnaround. Does that make sense?
That does make sense, yes.
Yeah. So just play with it. I mean, there's lots of things you can ask. If you experience the turnaround is true, how might you be living your life? How would your life be better? You know, sometimes as a homework assignment, I'll have the client write down that turnaround and add a piece of evidence or an example for why that turnaround could be as true or truer every single day.
Okay.
So those are just, anybody else have ideas on, anybody else been practicing the dismount and have ideas? No? Okay. So does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Good, good, good.
Thank you.
Good question. Thank you for asking me that because, you know, I find that people sometimes we focus so much on the structure of the work and the four questions. And we get to turnarounds, examples, and then we're like, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm. That's where I found myself. I was like,
Yeah. Yeah, now what? But start with that. I think that's the easiest thing to remember is what insights or self-discoveries did you have as a result of doing this work? Did you have any, you know, ahas? Okay. Anybody else? Questions. Okay. Well, we will move on. So today we are going to be practicing a couple of the basic ACT tools. Did you guys have a chance to listen to the demos or watch the videos?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. So that's really helpful. Do you guys have any questions about the ACT tools?
Jackie, this is Lisa.
Yes.
I had a question. When Martha was working with Robin, I thought she said she was using the ACT tools when she was taking things literally from his body. She would have him describe things and place them on the floor and talk about them and do you want to put them back inside? And I thought that's what ACT was. But then the video was nothing like that. So I guess I'm confused about what it is.
I'm not sure I remember that video. Who's Robin? I don't remember that video.
When she was had her spirituality class with us live a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So it differs from the video that she has and then the audio also. And I was curious what that was that she did.
Well, I don't know because I wasn't in that class.
I can't
speak to that. Did she refer to what she was doing as an ACT tool?
I thought so. Does anybody else remember that?
Yeah. I remember it. And this is Dee Dee. And she was doing just inquiry. She was just having him go deeper into the work. She was doing the work. And I think it was just, and I think she did say, you know, that this wasn't really a lesson, but that she just kind of felt like he needed more to get more in his body and have more inquiry around, because he seemed to be stuck in his fear. He had a lot of fear. Yeah. So, but I'm pretty sure she did not mention ACT.
Okay. Well, maybe that clarifies things. So you'll probably notice also if you have classes with Martha that sometimes Martha puts her own unique twist on things. So she'll put her own unique twist on the work. Sometimes she'll put her own unique twist on a lot of the tools that you'll be learning. And, you know, we encourage you guys eventually to do the same, bring your individuality and your uniqueness to the tool But of course, we want you, just like any other skill that you learn to become competent at or ultimately master, we really encourage you to stick to kind of the structure of the tools first, so you really have that foundation down before you, get all creative with it or add your unique flair to it. So sometimes you'll see Martha doing that, even with the work. You'll see she always adds her own unique flair to it. So any other questions about the ACT tools?
This is Dee Dee. I have a question.
Yeah.
I listened to the demo that I think it was Amy.
Right.
And I noticed I love the work. I think it's great because I love that disassociating with the story. But I did notice that she did a lot of questioning to the client, but she wasn't using the tell me where I'm wrong ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if that they leave that structure out of it, out of the ACT, or would we, or if it's just a preference?
Yeah, I mean, the HAT is, stands for hypothesis, antithesis, theory. So technically, it would probably be a tool that you would use as a way for you to hone in and distill down and refine the limiting belief. So when I'm, working with a client, I will use that tool, I'll ask a lot of questions. Why would he make that mean, for example? And then if I have a hunch about what I think the painful thought is or what I think the issue is, I'll use the HAT tool. And then from there, I continue to distill and refine using the HAT tool, maybe questions, to get to that succinct declarative limiting belief. So, most likely from that demo, she had already, and I haven't seen it for a while. I saw it when it first came out, or listened to it when it first came out. I believe she had already had the limiting belief or done that work with the client prior to what you heard. So she may have already employed that tool. And she was already working with the client on a particular thought. And, using naming that story and fact or fiction, I think, and, and having the thought. So my hunch is I could have her tell me where I'm wrong, but my hunch is she probably already used that as a way to frame up the limiting belief. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, actually it does, because she did
say
at the beginning of the demo that they're working on this certain limiting belief. So,
right.
Yes, that does make sense.
Yeah, you probably just didn't hear it. You just heard the section where she was applying ACT tools on the client's limiting belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, good question. Yeah, I love your questions, you guys. I feel like they're just super thoughtful. And I find that the more that you practice, and I don't know if you guys notice this, but what I notice is the more that you guys go out there and practice, the deeper your questions are, because you're actually integrating it. It's not so much an intellectual process. So I love your very thoughtful questions. Okay, or at least that's
Jackie,
my thought.
Jackie, I'm sorry. Were you going to follow me? I can wait. I had a question.
No, go ahead.
Actually, right off the question that you just answered, which was when we listened to Amy's demo, this is more of a question. I noticed that she was talking a lot and the client was saying very little, and I wasn't sure if that was because she knew this was going to be a demo and wanted to explain everything, or if this was a typical coaching session and the coaches really do speak much, because in my coaching sessions I try to get the client to talk more than I'm talking, and I don't – I want them to understand what I'm doing, but I don't want to over-explain.
Right. Well, I'm not in Amy's head, and I don't know how Amy coaches all the time or if this is typical of how she coaches. But, you know, I think it really runs the gamut. I've heard, you know, coaches who are really good coaches who tend to maybe talk more, and other coaches who are just as good who tend to talk less. And so this is where the art of coaching comes into play. My hunch is that she knew this was a demonstration and really wanted to make sure that within a reasonable time frame, that she, you know, employed, I think she employed two or three of the ACT tools. So my hunch is
right.
She probably was doing a little bit more talking for demonstration purposes.
Okay.
Because it's not my experience with Amy that she does that amount of talking. And then I recognize that too.
And that's good.
Yeah,
I found her explanation very helpful. I just didn't know if that's typical to explain that much to a client, or to, you know, I just wasn't sure.
Yeah, and
in a coaching session or not.
Yeah, and for you guys, I would err on the side of less explaining, because I think what happens is, and you guys can tell me where I'm wrong, but I think what happens is, at least this was my experience, when you're in this phase of learning where you become aware of what you don't know, it's actually called conscious incompetence. So when you first kind of start the training, you're unconscious of your incompetence. You don't know what you don't know, right? And you're real excited. It's like, I just started taking singing lessons over the weekend because I've always wanted to do that. And I thought, oh, this is going to be so fun and so awesome. And then I'm like, she's having me do all these exercises and moving around and thinking about things I'd never considered before. And now my body's moving, around moving. And I'm like, oh, now I suddenly become aware of what I don't know and how much is really involved in singing well, right? Whereas before, just thinking about it or signing up for the lesson, I was like super excited. So you guys are kind of in that phase of being aware of what you don't know. And it's very easy when you don't feel completely comfortable with these tools that you're learning and practicing, it feels awkward and not very organic and not natural, to want to resort to explaining concepts to the client. Because you probably know those better and really well, right? You've read all of Martha's books and, you know, you can kind of explain that. And that makes you feel maybe a little bit like, oh, I kind of do know what I'm doing, or I do know what I'm talking about. So if that resonates for you, and it certainly did for me, I would just invite you guys to, less is more is basically what I want to say. The less explaining, the better it is, because you don't want them to get, it's not a conceptual or intellectual process. So I do some explaining, because when I think it's a benefit for the client, like the base, like the framework for coaching, but I don't do like a lot of explaining with the work at all. And I don't always do a lot of explaining with the ACT tools, except to say something around, you know, that when we get kind of caught up in our emotions, it's very easy for us to react to it, to respond to it, and get kind of thrown by that emotion. So these are tools that can help you kind of step outside of that circle. And when you can name it, it helps you to manage it. And that's about as much as I'll say. So that was a super long, chatty response. Hope. Does that make sense?
Jessica, sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, okay, good. When I don't get an answer, I'm like, oh, did I get disconnected? Okay, anything else before we move on? Okay, one thing I do want to say, and I get this question a lot, so I'm just going to answer it in case it's something that has come across your mind. A lot of times people ask me, when would I use the HC2 tool and when would I use the work? Like, which one would you use first? So this is my preference. I like to start with the work because I find it goes deeper and broader. it really shows you how your thinking drives your feelings and your actions. So, you know, essays, themes, or other thought threads will emerge when you do the work. And if you've been practicing, you've probably noticed that, especially after question three, you know, how do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? And you'll often hear other stories or themes emerge. And so I do like doing the work for that very reason, that it tends to go deeper. And I like the client to see and recognize and experience how that thought impacts their life when they're married to it and who they would be without the thought, and to explore those turnarounds. And then what I'll do is I'll switch to the ACT tool. So, for example, when I was a coach, you know, 8 years ago when I first started, I used to have the belief that I was incompetent. Like, I just couldn't do this. I didn't have the talent. I was incompetent. So there's lots of themes around that one. But the big one was that I was incompetent. And I've done a lot of work on that thought and related thoughts. And it wouldn't be helpful for me to continue to do the work on that thought. And that thought, by the way, is not gone. I've gotten stronger and that thought has subsided, but it does get triggered when I do anything outside of my comfort zone. And so it's simply not effective or helpful for me to continue to do the work on that thought over and over and over again. So that's when I use the ACT tools, and I'll simply say, and this is when I'm sitting at that red light, right, which is why I love the tool, I could simply say, oh, I'm noticing I'm having that thought that I'm incompetent. So that to me is when it's most helpful, is using the ACT tool after doing the work. Or, you know, oh, I'll say there's that I'm incompetent story again. Okay. Any questions about that or comments? Okay, because you'll notice, and I think you guys have asked this question, what do you do once you do the work on that thought and you have the client comes back to you next week or 3 weeks later and that thought kind of pops up again, or a version of that thought or a related thought? This is, you can start playing with the ACT tools. So that they can just become aware. Yeah.
Hi, Jackie. This is Joanna.
Yes, Joanna.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Helpful. Because when I practice with my group, over the last few weeks, I realized that I had some of the same limiting beliefs coming up over and over. And there were times where I thought I had it fixed, so to speak. And I was great, and I was doing wonderful, and then I would have something happen. And it's that same trigger you're talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the thought is back. So this tool, it really comes full circle for me, and I intend to use it.
Great. Well, we're great. Well, and we're going to practice it today. And, you know, there was an interesting article. I don't know if anyone gets the magazine Psychology Today, but there was an really interesting article that I tore out about emotions. And one of the things that they talk about, although they don't reference ACT, but it is very much related to the concept of ACT, is that kind of like what I just said, is that when we experience our emotions, we have a tendency to get really thrown by those and really react to those. And so when you can look at it, and I'm actually, I have the article in front of me, and they say when you really can look at it and name it, it's a step towards managing it. And, you know, so our states of inner feeling are a great source of information. And sometimes they can be so intense and so overwhelming that we lose sometimes the ability to step outside of them, and they say put a circle around them. I like that. They say put a circle around them and call them something. I just really like that image. Is like, you know, and this is where you guys can be so helpful for your clients, is when your clients are really upset or have a belief about themselves or somebody else or a situation that triggers a really upsetting thought, this could be really helpful for them to be able to recognize the emotion, kind of put a circle around them and name it. Because when you can name it, you are in more control and you feel better. And once you've wrapped your head around it and named it, and this even applies to emotions, you can do something about it or with it. You might make a change in your life, something that, you know, you don't want to experience again, or you're just more likely to be able to kind of sit with it quietly and feel it. And so in this article, they say that running from emotions is much more exhausting than actually feeling it. I just really like that when, in this article, when it talks about being able to kind of step outside of ourselves, and that really is the cornerstone of ACT, is about being, not asking whether a thought is true or not, but is it useful? Not whether it's true or not, but whether it's useful, that's really serving you. And to be able to, in order to feel like you can manage your feelings more effectively, can you recognize the thought, put a circle around it. I love that. I just love that so much. And kind of, and name it. And it's so helpful because it tends to take the potency out of the emotions from that belief. At least it does for me. So, any questions about that? I just wanted to share that with you guys because I thought that was it was such a great article and I ripped it out. I'm like, I've got to share it with you guys. So remember, yeah, your mind is really doubtful and suspicious. It's your mind is like my mind. Your mind is like your client's mind. It is doubtful and it is suspicious. And so you may have clients who may be resistant to the work, or they may be resistant to using the ACT tools. So sometimes I'll say that to my clients. Your mind is like my mind. It's doubtful and suspicious. Can we continue to work this thought even if your mind is doubtful? You know, because the human mind creates problems, right? And so this is called normalization. And it's just a nice way to manage your client's resistance in a way that may make them feel a little bit more comfortable. It's like, I know your mind's doubtful. I know your mind's suspicious. Can we do the work? And when I say the work, I mean more generally, in a broader way, whether it's ACT tool or the work, even though you feel a little doubtful. Okay. So any questions before we move forward? Because we're going to actually have some fun and play with this tool, and hopefully a lot of you will get a chance to. We're going to do kind of a little bit of a round robin here. But I want to make sure that you're...
I have a question. It's Katrina.
Yes.
Okay, so since you said the work is deeper and more potent than you usually start with it, is there any reason why maybe you have a client who, like, if their mind is that suspicious and doubtful, that starting with ACT might be more appropriate because it seems a little, I don't know if gentler is the right word, but does that
yeah.
happen? Have any merit?
Yeah, great question. So that's not a rule. I just want to say that I apply, like, in all cases, I do the work and then ACT tool. And I love that question because that has happened for me in the past, where sometimes the work just feels maybe a little
too intense, and I feel that depending on my client's level of involvement, that sometimes just having them maybe dialing it back and having them just be the observer of their thoughts is a nice way to introduce this whole notion of, you know, fact versus fiction, if you will, to put it in ACT terms, right? What's really happening versus what's happening in your mind. So, yeah, I do sometimes will, depending on, again, my client's level of involvement, maybe their resistance, or maybe even sometimes how tender the issue is, I may start with the ACT tool to the degree, not necessarily, you know, naming the story necessarily, but maybe a version of that, which is just having them become aware of their thinking. Does that make sense?
Yep, that helps a lot.
Yeah, yeah, really, really good question. And again, art of coaching, right? You guys are going to have to feel your way through this for sure. So you're going to have to decide, depending on who your client is and these factors, what makes most sense. So, you know, sometimes you'll just go into the work and you may encounter some resistance, and maybe you need to do something else. When something doesn't work, do something else. And it's really about kind of playing with it. Yeah, good question, though. Anything else before we move forward? Okay. So I'm going to ask you if you have a piece of paper and pen to grab one. And what I'd love for you guys to do, I'm going to do a little demo first, is to write out a limiting belief you have about somebody else or about yourself. Doesn't really matter. Just one. I'll give you a second to do that. And it'd be helpful to just write it down so you don't lose track of it. And when you have that, and please pick something, by the way, that's like mildly painful, not this huge emotional, you know, issue, because for demonstration purposes, I think it's easy to use something maybe a little less, a little bit more mild and not too upsetting and too tender. So pick one that kind of reoccurs for you that bothers or upsets you. And if I could have a volunteer, I'm going to just demonstrate what you guys are going to be doing. So pay attention. Does anyone want to volunteer to be the client for a few minutes?
I will.
Okay, who's this?
LaSalle.
LaSalle, okay, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so LaSalle, do you have a limiting belief or a thought?
I do. My thought is my sister is trying to hurt me.
Okay, terrific, perfect. My sister is trying to hurt me, okay. Okay, so what I'm just going to ask you to do, LaSalle, is I want you to really focus on that thought and believe it as much as possible or as much as you can for the next 10 seconds. And if you need to bring up a situation to the forefront of your mind that really triggers this thought, maybe when you've been with your sister and this thought has come up for you, feel free to recall that. And try and focus on that thought as much as you can for the next few seconds. So, LaSalle, what do you notice when you think my sister is trying to hurt me?
My emotions kind of go all over the place. I bounce back and forth between being really sad and really angry.
Okay. is there any sensations you notice when you believe that your sister is trying to hurt you?
Mm-hmm. It feels as if there's a weight right in the middle of my chest.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, maybe it's sort of a tightening in my shoulders and my throat.
Okay. All right. So now I'm going to ask you, Lizelle, to insert the phrase, I'm having the thought that my sister is trying to hurt me. So play that thought again, then insert I'm having the thought. And if you could say this out loud, that would be great.
Okay. I'm having the thought that my sister is trying to hurt me.
Okay. And say it a couple more times, slowly.
I'm having the thought that my sister is trying to hurt me. I'm having the thought that my sister is trying to hurt me.
Okay. And what do you notice, Lizelle, when you insert that phrase?
It sounds and feels less personal.
Mm-hmm.
I feel more removed from it, distanced.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, it feels almost as if it's not about me anymore.
A little more spaciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I'm going to ask you now to play that thought again, but to try inserting, I notice I'm having the thought that my sister is trying to hurt me.
Okay. I notice I'm having this thought that my sister is trying to hurt me.
Okay.
I notice I'm having this thought that my sister is trying to hurt me.
And one more time.
I notice I'm having this thought that my sister is trying to hurt me.
Okay. And Lizelle, this time, what did you notice when you inserted that phrase? Notice I'm having the thought in front of my sister's trying to hurt me.
Well, when I said the word I notice, it kind of took me out of the thought and put me more in touch with what I was feeling inside, you know, the sensation, more than the thought.
And what
felt even lighter, you know?
Lighter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you notice any other sensations as a result of inserting, I'm noticing, I'm having the thought?
Well, that weight on my chest isn't as heavy.
Mm. Okay. Awesome. Were there any thoughts that you noticed that were related to that one?
The one thing that immediately came to mind is the thought that this isn't about me.
Okay. So my hunch is when you inserted the phrase, is it that thought emerged as a result of doing, you know, using those phrases when you're really the observer, that you began to try on or recognize that it wasn't about you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I immediately sort of got the vision or the thought that she's over there doing her thing. And I'm over here taking it on, you know.
Beautiful. So, Lizelle, my suggestion is that next time this thought emerges, that you try using this tool and be the observer and try calling your attention to your thinking around this belief or even related beliefs that come up for you.
I will. I definitely will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so that took, I don't even know, less than 5 minutes, I think. So any questions about that demo? You can see how simple it really is. That you first ask the client to really focus in on that painful belief and ask them what they notice, what they experience as a result of it. And you can see I did very little. And then ask her to just insert the phrase, I'm having the thought. I like when they say it out loud a couple, two, three times, because did anyone notice the change in the her energy?
Yes, definitely changed.
First, yeah. Especially that third time. I even noticed it the second time in a couple instances. Yeah. So when you have them say it, I like to have them say it two or three times and say it slowly because I feel that energy shift. So any questions about that tool?
This is Dee Dee. I don't know if it's a question, but I do like when you asked her about the any other thoughts related, did any other thoughts come up that were related?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so with that, I mean, that would actually occur towards the end. But I thought that was kind of powerful.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting that because she was kind of saying, well, I've noticed that this is about her, which is really awesome. I mean, that was an awesome insight. But sometimes what that question triggers is maybe a related thought, a variation of that thought. Maybe about or other thoughts about her sister, and so that that is just a nice way to segue into, having them use that tool on that particular thought should it come up again, or maybe the related one. In this case, she didn't have a related one, so you never know what you're going to get from those questions, but yeah. That's a good, yeah, I like that. I like that question, too. I don't even know if that's a part of ACT, but I think it is. It's just, again, it's a nice way to segue. Okay, so you guys are going to be trying this tool, and then maybe about halfway through, and or I'm going to leave it up to you if you want to take it also a step further, you feel like it's appropriate, to ask them to name the story. Again, that's optional. Okay? And I know Amy demoed that in her recording. So that's optional for you guys if you want to have them name the story. And remember, just really briefly, the purpose of naming a story is really to summarize, a cluster of situations where our mind makes the same conclusion, right? So it's like I was telling you guys in my example, when I first started coaching, the thought was I felt I wasn't confident. And now anytime I do something outside of my comfort zone, something that doesn't feel comfortable, like taking these singing lessons, I come to that same conclusion, right? And I even noticed it when I was in my lesson. I'm thinking, oh, I'm such a bad singer. And I noticed my thoughts around it, right? Which is a variation of I'm incompetent, right? So, circumstances change, as I just exemplified, but the story doesn't. And you can find all sorts of situations which will trigger the same painful conclusion. Right, I'm going to be giving a speech in March to 250 mental health professionals. That story is going to pop. I'm expecting that story to pop up as it gets closer, right? But now I have the tools to be able to address that. I know my story. I'm intimately familiar with it, and I'm going to probably use, there you go again, telling yourself you're not good enough to be speaking to this group of people. There you go again. Okay. So who wants to volunteer? I'd love to hear from somebody who maybe hasn't coached in Practicum 2. And I think that could be Sarah, Lizelle, Lisa. Any of you guys want to give it a shot? Excuse me.
I'll give it a shot on the other side of the cell again.
Okay. So Lizelle, awesome. So great. So you can just really follow my lead, how I just demoed the tool. How about you coach, how about Katrina? Katrina, are you up for a little coaching?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Hi,
okay, Lizelle. So I'm here if you need
Katrina.
Me.
But... Hi, Lizelle. Katrina, could you read to me the painful quote that you just wrote down?
Okay, my painful thought is my parents will never understand me.
My parents will never understand me. Katrina, could you take a minute or two to place yourself in a situation to pull to merge that my parents will never understand me?
Okay.
Can you feel right now what
feeling
it feels like? Okay, good. Now, I'd like you to try saying, instead of just saying, my parents will never understand me, put in front of that the words, I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me. And can you repeat that 2 to 3 times out loud?
I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me. I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me. I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me. Interesting.
What's interesting, Katrina?
It takes away, I guess, the sting of the original thought, which is what I was sitting with at the beginning, where I was feeling kind of heavy and dark, and it just sort of like I could feel almost like the darkness of it move away from me, like I could almost like I was repelling it, just by saying I'm having the thought in front of the statement. That was interesting.
So a little bit less painful is what I hear you saying.
Yeah, less sting about it.
How about saying, I notice I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me, and repeating that 2 to 3 times.
Okay. I notice I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me. I notice I'm having the thought that my parents will never understand me. I notice I'm having the thought, like I can almost make fun of it now. Like, I notice I'm having the thought.
It's funny you should bring that up. Would you like to try singing it, Katrina?
Not in front of everybody, but I can sing out now. even when I just said I'm having the thought, that like kind of made the darkness move away a little more, and this like I can almost like dance within it, and like it feels much lighter.
Um Now, Katrina, I'm thinking, or I may be very crazy here, so please correct me if I'm wrong, that this thought is one of many similar thoughts along the same theme that you have.
I would think so, because I was having a conversation about it last night with my sister.
It can be helpful sometimes to give the theme a name, so that when related thoughts pop up, you can reference it back to the original thought that it comes from. Can you think of a name that would be appropriate?
So about naming the story, like, because the statement is my parents don't ever understand me, should the name have to do more with my parents or more about me? Does it matter? Like, I
the name,
call it, you know, there's my sorry, my sorry parent story or my lame parent story, or should it be more like there's the I'm so misunderstood story?
Which one of those names would take you back most poignantly to the original thought that your parents were
the lame parent story? Yes, the lame parent story.
The lame parent story. So I would suggest or invite you to, next time you have one of those related thoughts pop up, to use this tool and to change the thoughts by saying, I notice that I'm having thoughts, in front of that original thought, and then reference it back as being part of your lame parent story.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Awesome.
Thank you, Katrina.
Okay. So, Lizelle, what did you think?
Yes.
What was that like for you?
It's actually fun because you mm-hmm. can feel the story becoming lighter. I mean, in Katrina's case, she made it really fun. So you can see a shift.
Yeah.
Right away.
And you had fun with her doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it did go to the process, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
well,
really
there's a lightness to the process, I think, when you invite the client to create some distance around their thinking. And that is really one of approaches that ACT takes, is by when you can notice the thought as just a thought, you can sometimes see the illogic in it or the silliness of it, or the humor in it. And that's exactly what happened in this session,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing, because then the client's not so entangled or absorbed or taking it so seriously, right? There's that, again, that lightness. So, awesome. You did a really great job. Katrina, how did that feel to go have Lizelle facilitate that?
That felt very nice. You know, it feels, you know, every time I get coached in practice or whatever, it's like, it. I don't know why it surprises me how well the tools work, because obviously they wouldn't be in the program if they didn't work. But no matter how simple the tool is, it does something. This actually feels better right now than before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think Lizelle did a great job. I felt very secure being led by her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of the ACT tools, is that instead of getting caught up in or hooked by your thoughts, when you can, you know, when you just insert those very simple phrases, it takes the power. And I love what you said. It, like, takes the sting out of them. And that's mm-hmm. really what we're aiming for. It's not about getting rid of the thoughts. It's a new way to handle your thoughts and feelings to lessen their impact. It's a way, and I'll say that again, it's not about getting rid of thoughts. It's a new way to handle thoughts and feelings to lessen their impact. So, Lizelle, I think you did an extraordinary job. It felt so organic and natural when Katrina has was, you know, it had inserted, I noticed I'm having the thought, and you could see that she kind of said it very quickly, and she was, you know, even observed that she was noticing this kind of the silliness and the humor in it. And there were, and you just, you recommended, hey, do you want to sing the thought to a song? And she's like, no. And I'm like, oh, Lord. But, and then you were able to, again, you know, I don't remember exactly what she said, but you asked her then to name the story so that she can reference it later on. And I love that you didn't take on the burden of making that decision for her, how, in what way she should name her story or how she should name her story. Mm-hmm. And you simply said, what would really take you back to that thought? That's what you were basically saying. And then that helped her make that decision to call it the Lane Parent story. So I think you handled that beautifully, because we want the client to find their truth. And what story or what name could she give it that would really most resonate or bring up those feelings for her more readily? And I think that was excellent. You just did a really, really nice job. Excellent.
Thank you.
I have no constructive anything to give to you. Well, actually, the only thing I would have to give to you, but I think she kind of talked about this, but you may have a client who may not reference this. When she said, my parents will never understand me, you know, sometimes that's a good opportunity as a coach to be able to say, so what do you notice when you, you know, have that thought that your parents will never understand me? So she could explore some of those sensations and then compare it and contrast it to how she feels or what happens when she inserts the phrase. But she kind of did that on her own more naturally. But if for a client who may not be as forthcoming, that could be helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, but beautiful job. Awesome. Okay. All right. So anybody else? Is Sarah here? I know Sarah has.
Yes, I am. Hi.
Oh, you are. Okay. Awesome. I thought you were here. Do you want to give it a shot?
I'd love to.
Okay. So how about, Sarah, you coach Dee Dee. Dee Dee, are you okay with that?
Dee Dee, hello?
Okay. Dee Dee?
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm here.
You're muted. Yeah. You up for being coached?
Okay, awesome.
Sure. All right, Sarah. You know the drill.
Hi, Dee Dee. How are you doing?
Hello.
So can you tell me the thought that you wrote down that's causing you some suffering?
Yes. My thought is, I will never lose this last 10 pounds.
Okay. So I want you to take a few deep breaths and put yourself into the last situation you can remember where you had that thought. I will not, can you say it one more time?
I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds.
Okay. So I want you to take a few deep breaths again and go back into a situation where you had that thought. And breathe into it a bit.
Okay.
And now I want you to insert in front of that thought, I'm having the thought that. And I want you to say it out loud.
Okay, I'm having the thought that I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds.
Okay, I want you to keep staying in your body and breathing, and I want you to say it two more times.
Okay. I'm having the thought that I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds. I'm having the thought that I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds.
Okay. Now, as you said that these last three times with inserting, I'm having the thought that in front of your thought, how does that feel? different compared to when you just said the thought that was causing suffering?
Well, it definitely turned it into, I didn't relate to it as much.
Tell me more about that.
There was more space. I felt I felt less sad around it, or I felt I felt more separated from the thought.
Did it feel any different in your body as you said it?
Yes. Yeah, so it didn't feel as heavy.
Okay. Did it feel any different in your body besides the feeling a bit lighter?
No.
Okay. Okay, well, now I want you to say it three more times, but now I want you to insert in front of it, I notice that I'm having the thought.
I notice I'm having the thought that I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds.
Okay, say that two more times for me.
Okay. I notice I'm having the thought that I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds. I'm noticing that I'm having the thought that I'm never going to lose this last 10 pounds.
So that last time you said that, I could really hear a difference in your voice. It felt much lighter. How can you describe that a bit to me?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem so true.
Mm.
It's got less weight on it.
Okay, and are there any other thoughts that come up around this thought generally for you? Is there a cluster
yeah.
of thoughts around this?
Yeah, there are several.
Okay.
I shouldn't have that thought comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting older, I'm looking older. I need to be thinner to make up for that.
Okay. Any others?
Nope.
Okay. Well, it can be really helpful to give a name for this cluster of thoughts. So when the particular one we worked on or any of these others come up for you, you can name it, and then it'll bring you back. It'll bring you back to that thought and bring a separation for you. So what's a name that you could think of that'll bring you back connected to all of these limiting beliefs?
Something really strong
that resonates for you, whether you feel it in your body, really strong. It brings you back there quickly.
Yeah, I'm not sexy and attractive anymore, story.
Right. So when you say that, I'm not sexy and attractive anymore story, does it bring you back to all of the cluster of thoughts or just the particular one we worked on?
It brings me back. It's pretty much the whole gamut, yeah.
So as you say that, can you say that one more time?
I'm not sexy. I'm not sexy and attractive story.
Great. So even as you say that, how does that feel to be labeling it?
I know it's not true.
Great.
It's definitely pushing it away.
Well, great. So as these particular one we worked on or the cluster of thoughts come up, I want you to try and not judge yourself if you can't say, oh, here is my I'm not sexy and attractive story. But I want you to try to recount that so you can remember, here it is again. This isn't true, and this is the limiting belief I'm having.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, what did you want me to do? I was thinking about the story. So, oh, you're just asking me to leave it
in
that
future, this
in
year,
that,
year.
Yeah.
When when these limiting beliefs come up again, the one we worked on or any in that cluster, I want you to try to use this tool of naming your story, the story that we just named. I'm not sexy. Here's my I'm not sexy and attractive anymore story.
Right.
If you can jump to that.
Yeah, I think that will definitely be helpful, because then I can, instead of being down on myself, I can kind of chuckle to myself.
Right, and remember the work that we just did on it, and there that is again.
Right, yes, very helpful.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to stop it here. Great job. I'm so glad, Sarah, that you self-corrected there, or you, what I call course correct, because what you first said is I want you to try and recount that and ask, is it true? And I was going to stop you, but you course corrected when she said, what do you want me to do again?
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I want you to remember, you know, the name of that story you gave it. Because that's really what we want to do, is not question whether thoughts are true, which is more of the work, but that noticing that they're not useful. And so sometimes, you know, just to give you guys some other language to play with as you guys go out practice, you could simply say to your client something along the lines of, you know, throughout the day, your mind will try to hook you back into this, you know, dilemma, if you will, and get you going over and over and over it again. So that's what our mind does, right? You guys, we worry and we ruminate, and we kind of go into this analysis paralysis with these painful beliefs. So you can simply say that to your client throughout the day. Your mind's going to try and hook you back into this dilemma and ruminate over it, and that's only natural.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but if it was really helpful, you'd have it resolved by now, right? So if you could say to yourself, if you could try, and I usually say instead of I want you to, I'll usually say to my clients, so whenever your mind tries to hook you, I would invite you, which feels a little better to me, to try and say to yourself, aha, here it is again. What did she name her story? The I'm not sexy or attractive story. Does that help? So that's a different, you know, way of playing with the language when you respond to the client and invite them to recall that story. You could simply say, when you notice that your mind gets hooked or you get entangled or absorbed into those thoughts, which is only natural, I would invite you to say, aha, here it is again, that, and then whatever the name of that story is.
Yeah,
okay.
That language is really helpful, because I knew what I wanted to say, but I'm thinking to myself, how can I say this the way I want to? So that's really helpful.
Yeah. And sometimes I even take it a little further, and I'll just say, you know, you can do a grounding exercise, like really push your feet in the floor, get present, and really kind of focus on doing something meaningful, and remind yourself of that story you're telling yourself, right? And having an individualized name for it is really, really important, you know.
Can I just ask you one thing about from the beginning of the exercise? I find myself tending to want to take clients into their bodies and doing some of the mind-body work. So is it okay when we do this with clients to really take our time, and even if for the first step, bringing them back to the situation where they had this thought, to take some time going there so that they can give us some examples of what that feels like in their body before going to inserting the first thing before the thought?
Yeah. So I like to, and if you heard how I demoed it, I believe I had asked, who was I coaching? Lisa. I believe I had asked, what do you notice? So I like to just be really, have an open-ended question.
Okay.
Like that. What do you notice when you believe, like in her case, her sister's trying to hurt her? And then she said sad and angry. And she said a tightening in her shoulders. And I said, is there anything else? Is there more? Or if they don't say that, you could say, are there any sensations that you notice in your body? So, yeah. I think I like that because I like them to get in touch with kind of the emotions that they kind of interpret as a result of their sensations and also those physical sensations, because I think that's really about being more mindful and also to, in this exercise, to compare it to when they insert the phrase, well, what did you notice then when you inserted the phrase? And what did you notice on a sensation level? What physical sensations did you notice? And then they can compare, like, oh, my shoulders aren't heavy, or there's more of a lightness. And again, the goal isn't for that to be gone. So just be a little, you did a beautiful job, by the way, but just be a little careful by being leading, because there's just one place where you're a little leading and you said, did you feel any difference in your body? That was a beautiful question. That's all you need to ask. But then you said, did it feel lighter?
I know. I caught that after I said it, that was very leading.
Yeah.
There's my tendency to want the client to feel good. So I have
good.
Watch
good
that.
To know. Good to know. So now you have this awareness, the brain that observes itself changes itself. So just be aware, and I'll tell you why, and this is just really good for everyone to hear. A lot of times we have an agenda for our client, right? I mean, really, we got into coaching because we, you know, people come to us for advice or counseling or coaching, you know, maybe in a very unofficial way, and it feels good to make someone else feel good. That's the truth.
Right.
But we really need to be careful kind of when we're wearing that coaching hat not to lead the client because of our agenda to want them to feel good so that we feel good, right?
Right.
So just something to really be aware of. And the other deeper reason is if you ask a leading question or if they smell that energy from you, like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to feel. I'm supposed to feel lighter. They might try and please you because clients put you in an authority position. They kind of put you on a pedestal. And when people put you in an authority position, they want to please you. So you don't want to kind of give any hints at there's a right or wrong answer here because you want them to find their own truth. And they may feel lighter and they may not feel lighter, and that's okay. So that's the reason why. So you have a broader understanding of why we don't want to ask those leading questions, because we don't want to set up a situation in which our client is going to say, well, I need to be happy or I need to feel lighter or that's the wrong answer, right?
Right.
So it may seem very subtle, and it's a nuance, but it's an important nuance. So super glad you asked that because then I get to address it with all of you. But you did a beautiful job. I love this tool, and you know why? Because I think both of you guys just really brought – it's a tool that's so simple, and you can bring your own uniqueness to it. So, you know, Sarah, you did such a nice job. And Lizelle, you did too, and it felt very different because you two are different, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt your individuality in both those demos, so really great job. Okay, any questions about that or what you just heard or just questions in general? Does anyone want to sing their limiting belief to the Happy Birthday song or Mary Had a Little Lamb? That's also an option too, which can be really fun. So when I had that I'm incompetent belief, I actually self-coached and I thought, well, how can I like sing this song? So I thought of what is like the most — okay, you'll relate to this if you're anywhere near my age, but if you're way younger, you might not. But I was thinking, what is the most, like, dramatic song I could think of, because to me, my incompetence story was a very, very serious. I took it very seriously, right? So I'm thinking, what can be the most, like, serious, sad, heavy, you know, exaggerated song I can come up with? So does anyone remember the movie The Love Story with Ally McGraw and Ryan O'Neal?
Yes.
Okay. So if you don't, at the end of the call, you can look, you can go Google theme to Love Story. And, you know, it's a movie about a man and a woman. They're in love. I think they're married. And she has cancer and she dies of cancer. It's very sad. And so is the theme song. So I took the theme song and I replaced the phrases with, you know, my story, which is, where do I begin to tell the story of how incompetent I can be, the sad, sad story of what a loser I am and will always be. And you can see that I'm not a great singer, so my singing teacher has a lot of work cut out for her. But I'm literally will never forget this. I'm walking around the block in my neighborhood, and I am changing the words to this theme song, and I am cracking up because I'm having so much fun changing the words, and I can see the ridiculousness of my story, and it was such a relief to me, and I'm just laughing my head off. People like walk in, and everyone going, here's a crazy lady, right? But try it. Try it with each other. I know you guys are a little embarrassed, even though I just demoed it, to do it on the call in front of everybody. But try it with each other when you guys practice. You'll have a lot of fun doing it. And so it could be the happy birthday song or, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb. But I had more fun with, you know, that one because it seemed just so apropos. Okay, so I would have, we really don't have the time for another duet, just kind of getting back to Sarah, you just did a really, really nice job. And one thing I really like that I noticed that you did right from the get-go is when you kind of checked in with Dee Dee about the thought, you said, tell me more about that. And I just want to, you know, emphasize and reinforce, just all you really need to do is ask those open-ended questions. And then she got a lot more specific and articulate about what that felt like. She said it felt like more spaciousness, less sad, I felt more separated. And I also felt like both you and Lizelle had really good leadership energy, and I felt your confidence. And as a result of that, I felt really safe. And I don't know what you felt, Dee Dee. I want to check in with you. But I felt like I was in safe hands. So
yes.
I wanted to.
I would agree. That. Definitely.
Dee Dee? Yeah?
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to share with Sarah? Any other feedback?
Yeah. I mean, I was following along with her, you know, because when you're in that story or that limiting belief, you know, you're not your happy self, you know, so it's good. It really did feel good as a client to have someone kind of walking me on this trail, you know, so I thought she did a really good job doing that.
Yeah. Awesome. So Sarah, anything you want to add?
Well, thank you for that. I felt myself getting more comfortable as I went along, and being more in it with her, and those two things I've already addressed. So yes, I felt like I was much more in it and could be more intuitive towards the end, which was really good to note. And I was really listening, and the second piece about that I really need to focus on of wanting my clients to be happy, even with my people I coach with, because I find myself caring so much and it becoming that. So I will keep an eye on that.
Yeah, and that's just a really good awareness to have, right? Is that, you know, we call it outcome attachment.
Yeah.
So
sometimes what we want. We want our client to feel happy, or we want them to feel better, or we want them to have an aha moment. But it's very difficult when you have outcome attachment to coach from your essential self, because you won't take coaching risks when you have that attachment, right? You may try and lead the session, and you will coach from your really from your social self, and you might play it safe because you're too you don't want to kind of upset the apple cart, or God forbid, make someone, you know, or not that you can make someone feel uncomfortable, but set it up so someone may not at the end of the session, because part of what we do and part of why people come to us is because they're in fight or flight mode. And sometimes the best thing you can do is help them to connect to their essential self, which is why it's so important that you be connected to yours first. And they might have to go through a period of them really feeling their feelings. And that may not always feel good. So if someone has come to you because they're grieving, for example, it's kind of an extreme instance, if you will, and they've been distracting themselves by shopping or eating or with other thoughts and not giving themselves permission to grieve, you will want to set it up so that they can feel safe enough to explore those feelings with you and not get distracted, not go into flight mode or fight mode. And sometimes that doesn't always feel really delicious, mm-hmm. if you will. So anyway, just wanted, so I'm glad that came up because I think it's important to address with all of you. And, you know, when we care so much for our clients, it's you know, we want to make sure that we don't inadvertently contribute to their story by, you know, because you'll find that sometimes clients will employ techniques to want to make themselves feel better. And, you know, sometimes when we're in fight or flight mode, our clients will want to take action, right? They want to do something to make, you know, have that conversation with somebody or make a decision, if you will, and you want to avoid any tendency to jump into that with your client if you have that agenda that you want to make them feel better, right? So it's so easy to get into a blind spot around that. Anyway, we could talk about this for the next hour, but good job. And the only last thing I want to say about ACT is, you know, I always like to remind my clients because so many of them self-flagellate and, you know, kind of beat themselves up. And I always like to remind them to talk to themselves gently and kindly and suggest that they unhook themselves from any unhelpful self-judgmental mind chatter. And by using these, what we just used are diffusion techniques. You know, we fuse with our thinking, we get attached to it, we believe it's true. But by using these diffusion techniques, it's just a nice way for our clients to be a little bit more, bring some compassion to their lives and see that they're fallible human beings and humans. And that, you know, so anyway, just something that I want to bring to your attention, and sometimes what I do with my clients is to invite a little bit more self-compassion, especially to those who self-flagellate and ruminate and worry about those beliefs that they have. All right, so we are going to end on time. I feel so good about that. So before we end, I just want to thank everybody for showing up for these calls. I felt your engagement. You guys were so present. I loved your questions. Keep practicing. That is really the only way to get masterful at these tools. Don't be afraid to go down cul-de-sacs or make mistakes. You are also fallible human beings, and this is how you guys learn.
No one wakes up knowing how to coach perfectly one day. No one knows how to coach perfectly, period, but no one really just wakes up and knows how to coach. It's a process. So I invite you to reach out for support or ask any questions. The thread will, you know, it will always be open. So please, please, even if there's a little part of you that says, I want to ask this, but I'm too embarrassed, or I'll figure it out, or it's not that important, please ask. Because if you have the question, a lot of people, everybody else might have the same question, or someone else might have the same question. You guys paid a good amount of money for this training, and I want you to get as much value out of it as possible. So please ask when the thought comes up and or the question comes up, and you know, I usually get back to people pretty quickly. So I just want to thank you, and it's been such a joy, and I hope that our paths will cross again, maybe in the future class.
Thanks,
right, Jackie. You are so
thank
welcome.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have an awesome day.
You too.
Bye. Okay. Bye.
You too.
Thank you.